back.
There we go.
Hey.
Doing my civic duty there. Forgot. Okay, my civic duty. So, it is December 22nd, 2024. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And actually, all the shows we do, we take the commercials out. We post them on the website under that particular, each show has its own page. And so all the guests have the shows we've done with them before and the archives of the show that day. And it stretches back 14-plus years. So you got lots of choices.
Yeah.
So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
And we are currently in sponsor shopping mode. So if you know somebody who wants to sponsor a nice show where nothing weird happens, I don't know, sometimes weird stuff happens. Did somebody throw a rock through the window one time? That was a little weird.
Sometimes weird stuff happens.
Okay, that did happen one time, but, you know, nothing bad happens. But we do have a lot of interesting people. And so our guest is Phil Kirpin this hour. And, Phil, I actually gave them your bio at the end of the last hour so that you would have more time. How great is that?
Great. Love it.
We told them to switch to decaf and get a seatbelt because you're that kind of guy. and we're counting on it. So the rumor is you've got some ideas on what's going to happen with domestic policy or some recommendations for, I'm not sure which, under the new administration.
I think I've got a little bit of both. I've got some predictions and some hopes. And, you know, I think like everyone, it's I'm kind of excited. It's obviously much better than had the current administration been reelected, but remains to be seen how much can be accomplished.
I think a lot of people are excited.
I'm not sure a fourth term of the Obama administration would have worked out for anybody.
Right, exactly.
Good Lord. All right, well, we'll just follow along, and we've got like 15 minutes till the next break, so you just let her rip.
Well, I think that... I love that, by the way. Usually people ask such specific questions.
No.
Going with the letter rip, I love it.
That's why we're popular.
Know, look, we just had a pretty interesting kind of preview, I think, of what some of the legislative dynamics are going to be like next year with the fight we just had over government spending, where they said we can't possibly break up this 1,500-page bill. This is the shortest, cleanest thing we could ever design. And then they... choked on it when the president-elect said he wanted something simpler, and then what do you know, it was 100 pages instead of 1,500, and then the media started wailing and gnashing of teeth about, oh my God, there was children cancer research that was in the big bill and wasn't in the small bill, and what's going to happen now to the kids, and then I think it was Elon pointed out, hey, the House actually passed that thing, you know, like early last year, it was the Senate that didn't, and then what do you know, the Senate passed the original single subject standalone bill, and there were a couple of other things like that. I think we got kind of a positive in the way that that was resolved. But at the same time that they were doing that sort of big public fight on discretionary spending, and they were sort of holding the line in this fight, and you know, maybe they got a slightly more productive outcome, we had 74 U.S. senators, I think it was, including about half the Republicans, voted to let people who were exempt from payroll taxes for years and have big pensions as a result of that collect full Social Security benefits anyway, basically get a windfall. It's going to cost Social Security $200 billion to do that. They did that like the same day.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've
can
got...
Can you go more into the windfall provision? Because the people who were for it are really for it, but the people it doesn't affect have no idea what that means.
Right. Well, let me explain what was done in the 1980s and then what was reversed this past a couple of days ago. Basically, before they passed the windfall elimination provision, it used to be, and I guess now it's going to be again, it used to be that if you worked a full career in a government position that's exempt from federal payroll tax, and there's some states where this is true of teachers and you know, firefighters, some other government professions where they've managed to secure an exemption from federal payroll tax on the theory that they don't need to be part of Social Security because they have their own pensions. And in fact, like in Texas, exempt positions, the average is like three or four times the benefit of the maximum from Social Security. So these pensions are they're very remunerative. It's a very, very good deal to be exempt, you know, for your whole career from paying federal payroll tax and be able to put that money into a pension instead, because the rest of us who pay federal payroll tax, the money's going to current retirees. It's a transfer payment. It's not like we get the benefit of it going into a pension and growing over time the way that these exempt workers did. But this issue arose where people would work a career that was exempt from federal payroll tax and get that exempt pension. But then, you know, often in these jobs, these government jobs, you could retire quite young with that full pension. So often they would go and they would start another career and do something else that was subject to federal payroll tax, and they would accumulate enough credit to qualify for a Social Security benefit. But the way the formula used to work, and I guess it's going to work again now, but the way the formula used to work is it ignored all your years of working and all the money that you earned when you were exempt. And so the formula, if you worked, you know, 10 or 15 years in a regular payroll tax-paying job, the formula would pad out the rest of your 35 years with zeros. And so it would treat you like somebody who had never worked in their whole life except for those 10 or 15 years that you were paying your payroll tax. And the consequence of that is, instead of getting a small additional benefit like somebody who had been working their whole life paying payroll taxes would if they worked another 10 years, you got a big, big benefit because the formula thought that that was the only work that you ever did. And so instead of thinking you were a high income worker who was subject to a low replacement rate in the Social Security formula, thought that you were a very low income worker who got a very high replacement rate because it thought those 10 or 15 years that you did were spread over a whole 35 years. It basically formulated in all those zeros, and so you got a very large benefit relative to anyone else who worked the same amount that you had but been paying payroll tax all along. And so what Congress did as part of the bipartisan deal back in 1983 is they said, we're going to have this windfall elimination provision that basically says we're going to calculate your benefit as if all those years that you were exempt, you were subject to the payroll tax and earning benefits, and you know, the Social Security benefit you get will only be the additional benefit that you would get from those additional years, which would be very small. But by the way, these are all people who have a pension that's much larger than Social Security. And so this was actually a very sensible provision. But what happened is the people who were subject to it organized politically over time, and they basically said, you know, this is unfair because we should get the same benefit as somebody else who, you know, never right. worked their whole life except for those 10 or 15 years that they paid Social Security, which is really the wrong way to think about it. And
well, because they weren't paying in.
Yeah, right. I mean, because they already won the jackpot by being exempt from payroll tax all those other years.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I think that this was sort of a sneak attack, and obviously the people who stand to get windfalls from getting the full benefit restored care about this a whole lot more than everyone else does, and they were able to organize and they were able to get this done. But the crazy thing to me is that it costs $200 billion. And so Social Security spending, the trust fund spending, is going to go up $200 billion. And then, like, they all agreed to do that, and then we're supposed to see, like, this great valiant fight on much smaller discretionary spending items going on in the same week, and we're supposed to pay no attention to that.
Yeah. That's that's the difficulty. The Senate winds up really jammed up with a lot of judicial, and if we pass this new thing where we're going to add a bunch of more, you know, kind of reallocate the federal judgeships and increase that number, they're going to be tied up even more confirming judges.
Well, it's more or less the most productive thing they do in the Senate, I guess.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bother me too much, but I mean,
no, but they claim that's where they run out of time to pass stuff. You know.
My point is just this idea that that we're going to make great progress on government spending because we have a Republican House, Senate, and White House. Well, you know, on the one hand, we did kind of have a slightly productive fight in terms of breaking up that large spending. Well, on the other hand, as I said, we said $200 billion increase in Social Security spending. It was done with half the Senate Republicans voting for it and a ton of Senate House Republicans as well. And so, I mean, nothing's going to be automatic. We're going to have a lot of fights next year, but they're going to be very challenging, particularly on spending. And, you know, I think that I'm actually very optimistic in general on the regulatory outlook under President Trump. I think he's going to be very aggressive on deregulation, particularly energy and healthcare, which are, I think, the most important sectors to deregulate along with financial services. So I'm very optimistic on that. I'm somewhat optimistic on tax, although I'm concerned that Senator Thune now wants to delay the tax bill until kind of the summer, which means the fall, which means it might not get done. I would much rather they do it early in the year, so I'm getting a little bit skittish on tax, but still overall I'm optimistic that they're going to be able to extend the Trump tax cuts and maybe pass some additional tax cuts. But I'll tell you, the area that I find it hard to be optimistic on is spending. I do think that there are going to be some very good spending reduction recommendations coming out of the DOGE Commission, but I just don't know that there's real that there's real will to do much to cut spending, and so that's the piece of the puzzle that I'm most concerned about in terms of kind of, you know, restoring robust economic growth and prosperity. And now that said, I do think, and this bears watching, of course, but I do think we're going to see a very interesting fight coming out of the Office of Management and Budget, where Russ Vogt is going to be back there as the director, and Mark Paoletta is going to be back as his general counsel. And, you know, while they were out of power the last 4 years, they worked on developing a legal theory on this issue of impoundment. And for anyone who doesn't know, prior to 1974, it was the norm that if Congress appropriated money for a project, the president could always complete the project while spending less than the amount that was appropriated and just return, you know, return the rest to the Treasury, use it for deficit reduction. Congressional appropriations were considered a ceiling, but they were not considered a floor. Until 1974, a law was passed called the Impoundment Control Act that prohibited the president from spending less than Congress appropriates on any specific line item. And that's a little bit perverse if you think about it, because, you know, if Congress says, you know, build a $100 million bridge and you can build it for $75, you know, well, what possible reason is there to waste another $25 million just because, you know, Congress got the number wrong when they wrote the law? And so,
right.
One of the arguments that these OMB guys plan to make is that the Impoundment Control Act is unconstitutional and that the president has an inherent executive branch authority to implement laws more efficiently and while spending less than Congress had anticipating and to return the savings to the U.S. Treasury. And I anticipate that they will try this. There will be litigation. I don't know who will win that litigation. But if the Trump administration can prevail, then the outlook on spending potentially becomes a lot brighter because, you know, for any given line item, it can be the executive branch that finds a way to find savings instead of it having to be an exercise in Congress. So that's the one sort of thing to watch where we might be able to make some headway on spending. But, you know, even on that, you know, that's not likely to help us with in the biggest drivers of spending necessarily, which are, of course, federal health spending and Social Security. So, you know, I am optimistic.
Yeah, do you think they'll take any of that up?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I think the health team that's coming in, assuming that RFK and Marty McCary and Jay Bhattacharya, who I know a little bit and I'm a huge fan of, you know, if the nominated team gets in, I will tell you that they are totally different from what we've seen before in these health positions. Okay, they are not subject to the normal sort of insider pressures and accumulated power centers and the pharmaceutical industry and the hospital lobby and the insurance companies and, you know, sort of the other big massive interests. And that means that they're potentially destabilizing, which some people find, you know, scary. I think it could be very helpful because I think a lot of that needs to be sort of destabilized and questioned. And I think that we may have an opportunity to have some major positive changes in the healthcare area just as a consequence of putting in people who are going to be much more aggressive. And I also think, you know, in terms of what's possible legislatively, we've got some things that are, you know, the supersized Obamacare subsidies are set to expire. Democrats are going to be desperate to extend those. But, you know, if they want to, there's going to have to be some negotiation. There's going to have to be some give on some other aspects of healthcare. And, you know, I think that and I think that we may see something on PBMs. I was one of the disappointments, actually, that the end-of-the-year spending bill, the bigger one, failed, is that I actually thought a lot of the PBM reforms that were in there were pretty positive. They would stop, you know, a lot of savings that should have been passed on to seniors in Part D from being diverted to insurance company profits. But, and as far as I can tell, even though Trump supported them, that stuff all came out just because, you know, they wanted a spending bill to just be a spending bill, basically. They wanted to remove as many extraneous provisions as possible, even the ones that conservatives like those. So I'm hoping that those will be revisited next year. But I think that, you know, at least in terms of kind of COVID accountability and changing kind of the public health and pandemic response stuff, everyone who's been nominated by President Trump is kind of on the opposite team of the people that did all that stuff.
Yeah, so which is really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that a redo of that, I think, is one of those things that
especially because they're ramping up the bird flu hysteria right now.
I think
you're under a state of emergency in California.
I know. It's like we have to have something to be hysterical about. But I am hoping that they'll be able to get a grip on just, you know, who would have thought in our of it seems like the more information we have, the less we use. You know, here we have all this science available to us, all this history available to us, and yet, like in 2020, we watched all of that be disregarded for some weird, you know, stand 6 feet apart and all this stuff.
Yeah. Which they admitted they made up.
It's like it had no basis. It had no grounding, in fact. And then it didn't work. And yet they claim, no, yeah, it worked great.
And then they said it was our fault for not listening to them. If only they had locked down harder and, you know, they hadn't had those nasty, you know, critics.
Right.
Then it all would have worked.
All those horrible no mask wearers and all that stuff. I mean,
right.
Yeah, we ruined it.
It's one of my great points of pride from the whole COVID era. There was an MIT study that was called mapping the anti-mask influence networks or something. And I was in there. They had my name in there. And I was like, okay, great. And then they had we analyzed the things they were writing and saying on Twitter and in their publications, and they were like, contrary to what we expected, they were not anti-science. They actually made scientific and data-driven arguments. Yeah, you think?
Well, yeah.
It was like, thanks, MIT.
It was ridiculous because even, not in my actual physician's office, but like in the eye doctor's office, they were hooked on the mask thing. Well, I have 30% lung capacity. I'm not putting something over my face unless I want to die. So it's like, no, I can't wear your mask. And they made me sit outside.
Amazing.
I had to sit outside. So, well, I've kind of told
you. Well, I'm thinking if we get Dr. Dave Weldon in at CDC, a lot of that nonsense is still on the CDC website.
Yeah, it is.
Clean up all of that. Because there's no... All of the evidence base before COVID said that masks are ineffective for respiratory viruses. Everything we now have post-COVID says that too. And they still have this stuff on the website saying, you know, wear a mask. So that needs to be cleaned up, and there needs to be...
Hopefully we can get somebody in there who...
A big mea culpa.
Yeah, who cares about science.
You know, for CDC, they nominated Dave Weldon as a former member of Congress, very conservative, but... I mean, the guy had been retired for like 10 years and was nowhere to be seen. He was back just as a regular practicing doctor during COVID, didn't do anything public, he wasn't involved in any of these policy fights. And so, yeah, that's sort of some cause for hesitation versus, you know, some people that we might have liked that we knew were very, you know, active in public. But, you know, he's, RFK favors him, and I think that he's totally non-beholden to any of the normal power centers, and he was very good, very conservative as a member of Congress, and so I look forward to that confirmation hearing. CDC used to not be a confirmed position, so none of Biden's people had to be confirmed, but they actually...
Oh, you're kidding.
It.
I didn't know that.
So now it's going to be a confirmed position.
Do me a favor, Phil. Hold on for 5 seconds, and let's take a really quick break, and then we will come back with you, because I kind of want to hear more about that. I don't think people know about him at all, and it's easy to mislead people when they don't have any information, so we should pick your brain on that one a little bit more.
Sure.
Our guest is Phil Kirpin, and we will be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant, O come ye to Bethlehem. Come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him. Christ the Lord.
Have a I believe in my heart it's the gospel truth, but we'll never know just what it was like to be a part of that scene the first Christmas night. The big star was shining, angels were smiling, wise men came from afar. Who would have dreamed the King of all kings would lay on some hay in a barn? Just some old farmland with a savior in the hands of a sweet young innocent girl. When heaven came down to earth, it must have been out of this world.
That was Cody Webb. It's kind of a fun song. The whole song's nice.
Yeah.
So, okay, back to the CD, the new CDC potential pick. And I didn't realize that we didn't confirm any of the Biden guys.
Yeah, that was, you know, they did this CDC reform bill. They didn't really fix any of the problems, but the one thing it did that's kind of worthwhile is that it made that position subject to Senate confirmation. And so, but it was like, you know, the way they wrote it, I think this passed 2 or 3 years ago, but the way they wrote it, it was like effective January 1st, 2025. So they made it so it wouldn't apply to, you know, to the I guess current. I was going to say then current president, but he is still the current president.
Yeah, he's still around somewhere.
Sure.
I was going to say, I don't know where they have him stashed, but...
Rumor has it.
Sleepy Joe is still in there someplace. Yeah, that has been...
Yeah, so it's weird. Very interesting. Dave Weldon was a very conservative member of Florida. He has an autistic son, and when he was in Congress, he did a lot of the hearings around vaccine issues and potential autism links and vaccine liability protection. He actually passed the bill... to remove mercury from vaccines. Mercury used to be used as a preservative in vaccines, and it's highly toxic, and so there were always a lot of concerns. You know, the people who supported it said, oh, the levels are so small, there's not going to be a problem. The people who were against it said, okay, but why not zero? And you know, they ended up prevailing when Dr. Dave's bill passed, and they took mercury out of the vaccines, and that's kind of what he's most known for that's relevant in this area. He was... Yeah.
Well, that would have put him on, really, on the same track with RFK.
Yeah, I think he was really an RFK pick, and in fact, a former Dave Weldon chief of staff has been working for RFK on the transition, and I think that's how.
Oh, there you go.
That's how this all came together. So he's very much an RFK pick. You know, that said. I believe he was a Navy doctor, and you know, he was a member of Congress for 10 years or something like that. He did something kind of unusual, right? He retired from Congress, and instead of staying in Washington and becoming a lobbyist and to TV talking head and all that kind of thing, he just went back home to Brevard County, Florida, and went back to being a practicing doctor. Just being, you know, went back into general practice, and he kind of dropped off the sort of public radar screen until I think. Earlier this year, he tried to run for a state legislative seat, and he lost in the primary. So he sort of got the politics bug again, sort of out of the blue, as far as I can tell. Earlier this year, and that's probably why he threw his name in the hat, his hat in the ring. Name in the hat, does that work? I don't know. I'm mixing up my metaphors, but I think that's probably he spent a decade back in private practice, and he wants to be back in public policy, but. It was a weird one, I think, for me, because this name came out of nowhere. You know, having someone who was sort of in the trenches on the COVID wards every day, you know, for all those years, have a name that had sort of been out of politics and had nothing to do with any of that. It was sort of like, you know, where'd that come from? But I've been reassured by a number of people who've been around D.C. for a long time that he's very conservative and that I'll like him. So I've not met him yet. I don't know that much about him beyond what I just told you. But it was an RFK pick, and I do think he's going to be pretty solid in those confirmation hearings. But you know, this is why I'm glad we are going to have confirmation hearings for the CDC director. I'd like to know a little bit more before he takes the job, and so I'm glad that they did make that change.
Well, I'm just glad he's an actual medical professional. You know, isn't some bureaucrat who's going to
quote public health people like you know this woman we have now the. the North Carolina health director who was on tape giggling about how she decided to ban high school football because she called up the Massachusetts health director and they had banned high school football, and she couldn't be less, you know, she couldn't ban less stuff than they did. Have you seen this video of Mandy Cohen?
No.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. So people were circulating it when she got the CDC job. But, yeah, she basically was like, well, if they're, you know, I called them up, and if they're banning football, I'm going to ban football. And then she giggled.
Oh, my gosh. See, that's the thing. It becomes a big power deal. It isn't what's good for the public. It isn't what. It doesn't have anything to do with health or safety.
They were
or
just all copying each other, and none of them knew anything about anything. I mean, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It just was. Yeah, that was, but it kind of created its own sort of, and we all saw it. I mean, it was a mass hysteria. You know, people became just downright vicious and weird through that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the thing that's really beautiful to me is the Jay Bhattacharya nomination for NIH, because the NIH director, Jay Bhattacharya, just one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Always stays calm, always is respectful to everyone.
And what is his background? Let's just assume nobody's ever heard of him before.
He's a really, really good scientist. He's an MD, PhD. He's a MD, PhD health economics professor at Stanford University and at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. I guess Stanford Medical School.
Okay.
And the Hoover Institution at Stanford. And so he went to medical school, got his MD, but he never practiced as a doctor. He then studied economics, and he's sort of gone into kind of the policy and sort of the academic side of medicine. But he's one of the only scientists who's been in the top medical journals and in the top economics journals. So it's a very rare sort of breadth of kind of across two areas that that too often don't speak to each other very well. And so he's got top tier science credentials both in economics and in medicine. And Jay was the first one very early on to say, you know, the hysteria may be overstated. Let's like calm down before we wreck all of society over COVID. And he called for doing what are called zero prevalence surveys, and he did the first zero prevalence survey in Santa Clara County. They just did random blood testing to try to figure out how many people had had COVID, and this was early on in 2020, and then they sort of were able to estimate the risk and the severity, and they found numbers that were much lower than what was being pushed at the time, and they basically made the case that, you know, we should not panic, essentially. And he was attacked a lot for that. And then later on in 2020, and sort of the fall of 2020, probably the thing he was most famous for is he co-authored something called the Great Barrington Declaration with Martin Kulldorff.
Oh, yeah.
And Sunetra Gupta from Oxford. And they basically said that our strategy should be a focused protection strategy, that we should try to protect high-risk individuals, to isolate them to the extent possible. But there's no justification for things like school closures and business closures and the really disruptive measures. And they tried to basically say we should never do lockdowns again. And it's interesting because when they put that out, I want to say it was September 2020, something like that. When they put it out, I was kind of like, well, that's late to the game. You know, they're never going to be lockdowns again. But there were. There were a lot more lockdowns after that from places that didn't listen to them, sort of when that winter wave hit. And Francis Collins, who was then the NIH director, and, you know, Anthony Fauci, who worked under him as the NIAID director, which is one of the NIH's National Institutes of Health, plural. One of those institutes is the National Institute on Allergy and Infectious Disease. That's the one that Fauci ran. Excuse me. I'm in my basement office there. And I'm making a cough. I don't know. I'm not actually ill at the moment, but I'm a
dentist. We're talking about illness, so
yeah, right.
Psychosomatic basement coughing. Nice.
Yeah, I don't know. but you know, they went nuts when Great Barrington Declaration came out, and Collins and Fauci, you know, 4 years later found called for a swift and devastating takedown, and they basically smeared and blackballed Jay, and they're just nonstop vicious personal attacks on him. They called him a fringe epidemiologist, all this kind of crazy stuff. And, of course, he was basically right about almost every particular, and they were wrong. And, you know, Collins later admitted that he was totally wrong. He basically said, we assigned a zero value to anything besides COVID and an infinite value to preventing COVID. And and that was a mistake. And so there's a certain poetic justice if Jay, in fact, gets confirmed to the position of the guy who called for a devastating takedown on him and called him a fringe epidemiologist. But beyond sort of the poetry of it, I think Jay will do a very, very good job of reorienting NIH away from all the crazy woke nonsense and all the kind of insane waste of our money towards doing like actual useful, productive research stuff and making merit-based instead of highly ideological. And that's one of the Trump names that I'm most excited about. I think that if he gets through, he'll do a really, really good job.
That's awesome. Yeah, he is a name that's thrown around a lot. So how are they going to demonize him? I mean, obviously there's limitless ways, but what's his...
Oh, they're already trying. Supposedly he was... They're trying to say that he just wanted to let COVID rip and kill everyone, and it would have been reckless. And it's kind of like, we didn't do anything he said, and the results were pretty terrible. I don't really know. They could have been worse, but they're trying to attack him over that. They're trying to attack him for being... associated with RFK. They're trying to attack him for the one attack I've seen a lot of is there was a very famous cancer researcher in the late 80s, early 90s named Peter Duesberg. I think he was based at Berkeley, and he was very famous for saying he didn't think that HIV caused AIDS, and he thought that it was all all drug abuse, and he called Fauci like the worst. He had all these battles with Fauci. And Jay wrote something that was like, even though Duesberg was wrong about HIV and AIDS, he shouldn't have been demonized and treated the way he was by Fauci. He should have just been like refuted in a normal scientific way instead of being, smeared and subject to attacks and all that kind of thing. And then they tried to like take that to say that like Jay supported AIDS deniers and he's dangerous, and so they're trying to it's pretty distorted. He definitely did not say Duesberg was right, but he said the way Fauci treated him was wrong, and so they're trying to use that as a way to attack him. I've seen that in a lot of places. So I don't know. I mean, they'll come up with some crazy stuff, I'm sure.
You think there'll ever be a reckoning on the Fauci thing?
Well, I mean, they're saying that Fauci might get a pardon from Biden before he
leaves. Would he need a pardon?
It would be kind of strange. I don't think they're going to do that because the guy's 80-something, and I mean, I don't think Trump's going to actually criminally charge him with anything, even though, I mean, he blatantly committed perjury on multiple occasions, so he could be charged. I think he's going to basically get away with everything. And half the country still loves the guy. Amazingly enough.
Yeah, isn't that just confusing?
But I think, if he does get the pardon, at least we'd be able to say, hey, but he probably, he must have committed some crimes if they pardoned him, right?
Well, you would think. I mean, that's kind of a tell, right?
Yeah.
So what about all the... Who should... it's kind of a loaded question, but there's just so much misinformation out there. What are, like, sources that if you were going to send people to go do some, I always send people to congress.gov. Like, if you want to know what's in a bill, go look at it.
Yeah.
Go look at the real thing.
That's very good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. Go look at congress.gov. Go look at who's co-sponsoring. Go look at how much activity there's been. Because they're constantly saying, like, they're going to take away all your guns. And it's a bill from, I remember the one was, 2 years ago. And it was Hank Johnson, the guy that thought Guam was going to tip over.
Oh, the best, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this guy's bill's never passing. This isn't a thing. It's never gone through committee. So it's like, why are they... And it was like Sean Hannity telling everyone, oh, my God, there's HR, imaginary, that's going to take away your guns. I'm like, nope, not happening. But besides that, like, what do you consider sort of... No one's perfect, I get it. But what are some pretty decent sources if folks wanted to go to sort of verify that what they're being told is maybe real or maybe not?
Well, I try to stick to primary sources whenever I can, and so
So not TikTok.
I'm not on that one at all. And by the way, it's going to be very interesting because Biden's TikTok ban is supposed to take effect January 1st. So we'll see we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's kind of in the offing, isn't it?
So I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be very interesting, by the way, because if you ban TikTok, I'm sure the government can get, like, Apple and Google to take it out of the app stores, but you're not going to you can't uninstall it from all the millions of phones that already have it. And so how do you, you know, and then you got to figure that as soon as they take it out of the app stores, there are going to be 7 million videos about here's how you can get it
in
the app store, right?
Right.
How? So I'm very interested. This could be an interesting kind of exercise in sort of the limits of government power, whether they can actually implement this. I think it's unlikely to actually succeed. I think that TikTok being illegal will probably make it more popular than ever.
Yeah, you know, that always happens. Yeah, you can't have it. Whoops, I want it twice now. You and I would probably sign up for it then.
Now I'm off on a tangent. Sorry.
I have people who consistently get their information from TikTok, and it's like, guys, come on.
Well, there are probably some accounts on there that are reasonably reliable.
But a lot of it, I mean, because
I think you need to verify everything.
They send it to me, and I'm like, this is some guy sitting in his truck. Like,
you got to look everything up these days, and you know, I think you need to, you know, obviously for legislation, it's the easiest because you can look it up and see what it says. But I think anything, you know, if somebody tells you a study says such and such, and it's a news article, pull up the actual study, find it, read what it actually says, look at the numbers underlying it if they've published those, see if they line up with what the narrative section says. I just think you need to go a couple of steps deeper on almost everything these days. And of course, you know, I'm biased. I would say you follow me, I'm reliable. And of course, everyone says that. So, you know,
I'm not really. I don't think a lot of them actually do say they're reliable. They just pretend to be reliable, and everyone assumes that they're touting their prowess. But I don't think that's true. There are a lot of them. I think they're misleading people, and they just go and do it. Oh, speaking of misleading people, we have to take a really quick break, Phil. I'm just free floating in time today. I kind of stink at time anyway, but today I stink at time even more than usual. Our guest is Phil Kirpin, and he is always full of tons of information. And we will be back with him after our break. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Christmas music ahead. Here you go.
Yep.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright.
Merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay.
Make the Yuletide gay.
From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Here we are as in olden days. Happy golden days of yore.
Little Frank. Can't have Christmas without Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Phil's making a face at me. What the heck? Oh, we tried to include everybody. Had a little country. We had a little Sarah McLachlan. I didn't play the Weird Al one, though. Christmas at Ground Zero. It seemed a little harsh. Out of keeping. Although I do like that one. We'll play that one next week. All right. Phil.
Yeah.
I thought you got caught in the cone of silence there for a second.
No. I didn't know I'd been asked a question yet.
Oh no. Well, I cut you off before. You know, like we abbreviated.
I know, but after the go, where was I? I don't know.
I know. What the heck were you talking about? it was something, and we zigged, and then we zagged, and then we lost it. Well, I'm really curious on your, you know, like your time with Free Enterprise Fund, Club for Growth, Cato, that I read all before. Where are those guys on all this?
Well, I think that...
And America for Prosperity, too, for that matter.
Yeah, a lot of the, a lot of kind of the traditional sort of free market advocacy groups have had a rough few years. A lot of them were sort of Trump deranged. A lot of them sort of failed COVID and supported lockdowns and stuff like that. They've generally sort of found their footing again, but most of these groups don't have a lot of influence the way they used to, honestly, because people have direct access to information now in a different kind of way, and you know, everything moves so quickly on X now, and it's not like it's not like a lot of people read these studies and that kind of thing. I mean, the in addition to my own American commitment stuff, the think tank that I work with as well is called Committee to Unleash Prosperity, and I do that with Steve Moore and Art Laffer and Steve Forbes and Larry Kudlow, kind of, although he's, you know, since he's been at Fox, he's not officially affiliated. And, you know, we try to do studies that are much more on the margin, kind of where they can have a real impact, and it's not just sort of academic type, you know, white papers that no one's going to look at. And so if people want kind of economic news and analysis, I would definitely say get our daily email that we do at unleashprosperity.com, and it's totally free, and you'll get kind of, you know, it goes under Steve Moore's name, not my name, but I do the first draft every day before he rewrites it, and so I have a lot of input in that, and that will give you a lot of kind of what I think are the best and strongest kind of highlights of what people used to get from a lot of these other kind of economic think tanks and that kind of thing, which I still have friends at a lot of those places, but I think they've lost some of their relevance.
I was going to say, they seem to have kind of faded into, I think, your assessment of saying they've kind of all gone academic, I think, is kind of true. So there isn't a tremendous amount of on the ground, like, hey, we need to be doing this, 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 and this.
Yeah, there's some. I mean, the thing is, I you know, when something useful comes out of those places, I think that, you know, you can sort of pick it out and use it. But I think, you know, by and large, you're not going to get active with one of those groups and have that be your main sort of, source of, news and information, and, you know, be kind of an active and engaged citizen as a consequence of that. I think you really need any groups more like mine, really. Of course, I'm biased, as I said before, and you need to be on X. I feel like everything happens on X now.
Yeah, it does. Well, it kind of did, even when the bad guys...
even when it was Twitter, everything happened there, which is why it was so nefarious when they banned people, or even worse than banning people. I mean, you know, we were talking about Dr. J in the last segment. He was never banned from Twitter, but they removed him from search results. So people didn't see, you know, they did searches, they wouldn't see him. That's almost worse,
which,
right?
Which is like,
because
being banned.
When you're banned,
yeah,
you know you're banned, right? When you're just being, you know, not visible in search results, you don't even know what's happening to you.
I put up, I added the link to today's page for the Unleash Prosperity, for people, so that way they can go to that. But you guys have, you have a lot of information on there. And the newsletter, how often, just so people have some idea?
It's normally every weekday, but this coming week we're probably just going to do Monday, Friday, and then I think the following week we're going to do like Monday, Thursday, Friday, or something like that.
Okay, right, so it isn't like 15 things a day, like sometimes you accidentally
do that?
It's
exactly 5 items a day. It's exactly 5 items a day, and sometimes we have a lot more, but we force ourselves to cut it down because we don't want to impose on people's time. So it's exactly 5 items a day, and then one humor item. We always throw like a cartoon or a meme or something funny at the end. So even if all our items are bad, it will at least make you smile.
Well, that's a good one. I always liked it. Our office used to do wasteful spending item of the week. It was always in the newsletter, and there was some pretty good stuff.
Well, with those, you probably have to laugh or you'd cry.
Yeah, we tried to find the most ridiculous, and sometimes it was a little bit of a, it's like, well, I guess we'll wait till next week for that one. There were quite a few choices. So we were talking about like sources and news and ways for people to get information. Who is let's call out some of the worst. It's all the ones we already know. are the folks that, that traditionally and routinely mislead. But they're kind of they're kind of going away.
I think the the Global Engagement Center, which was the State Department's anti-misinformation outfit, and when government and kind of liberal establishment entities tell you they're fighting against misinformation, what that actually means is they're promoting misinformation.
Yeah.
They're fighting against true information that they find inconvenient.
Yeah.
Is generally what most of those outfits do. That was originally in the funding bill that Speaker Johnson had agreed to, the long one, the 1,500-page one. It got taken out. And so, in theory, the State Department is no longer going to be in the business of, policing speech and calling it misinformation and disinformation. So that's some good news out of this week. But, of course, there are many other entities, NewsGuard and FactCheck and all PolitiFact and all this kind of, that are really in the business of policing speech from conservatives and claiming that it's false. And generally, the truth is almost always the opposite of what these so-called fact-checkers claim it is. Now, I'm not going to say always, because sometimes they pick actually, outlandishly false things because they can. Sometimes people say them. But more often than not, it's just partisan political, attack your enemy stuff. And so I think, you have to discount almost like 180 degrees what these fact checkers say. And my presumption is that the opposite is probably true when I see them say things. Of course, they sometimes fact check me. I mean, I remember I got fact checked, during the election when I said that the Inflation Reduction Act stole $260 billion from Medicare for unrelated spending. They said that I was lying because it's normal practice in bills to, use the savings from one provision to pay for another. And I'm like, actually, you just confirmed what I said. But they left it fall.
So we're doing it, but it's okay if we do it.
Yeah, right. So there's a lot of that goes on. I mean, I think, to the extent you can, read the primary sources yourself and make your own judgment. I know a lot of people don't have the time or the level of interest to do that on every issue. So you do need to find some sources that you can sort of trust and that you've seen be right, over a period of time. And, that's why one of the reasons that we have that newsletter is I think, we generally have a reputation as people that have a pretty good track record. And so, that's one way that you can get information. But also, we've got community notes now on X. I mean, there's a lot of sort of crowdsourced fact-checking of stuff now that tends to be much better than these sort of self-appointed institutions.
Yeah. Well, and some of it, it used to be if they were promoting something that sounded crazy, it probably was. But now, all bets are off. Now sometimes the crazy stuff is real.
Yeah, I mean, conspiracy theorists have had a pretty good scorecard over the last couple of years, to be honest.
The big joke is always, I've got to find new conspiracy theories because all mine came true.
right. Yeah.
And that's kind of where we are. There's a lot of stuff. You're like, wait, that can't be. Nope, it's real.
Yeah, I'm still, along those lines, I'm still trying to prove that the American Academy of Pediatrics only reversed their support for schools in summer of 2020 to try to hurt Trump politically, and I really believe that's the case, and I actually have litigation to try to get their emails, and I may get those in the next few weeks, and so that could be interesting.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's nice. Well, you have to come back and tell us about that.
Yeah, that might, I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll produce them and there'll be nothing useful, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, or not. What do you think about the couple of votes that we've got in the House? We have probably about another, 30, 45 seconds. Actually, before we run out of time, I should thank you for coming on. I never do that. It always winds up being, okay, see you, bye. Thanks a ton for coming on. We always really appreciate it because you're
a
wealth of information and you do like to kind of freewheel it, which is...
Yeah, we're all over the map this hour.
I like it. We like being all over the map because honestly, when you plan it out, it's not fun. It's not interesting, and I never ask the same thing twice, so I already, I'm bored by then. Like, we already talked about it, so then we don't cover stuff correctly. But I like it better when you guys drive the bus. It's always much better. But how hard do you think it'll be with the slim majority this next time? What's your guess?
Well, it's going to be really tough.
Wrapped around the axle?
Especially, especially when we have, when it goes even lower, if some of these House people get confirmed to some of the positions Trump nominated them for, it's going to be very, very difficult. It's going to be more like the Senate, where just a couple of people can hold anything up. And, you know, you've always got, you know, you got those 5 or 10 or 20 guys that have got their own ideas. And I think that...
And that makes it hard. They can hang us every time.
But I think on the really big things, okay, on the border, on the tax cuts bill, on the really big things, if people try to say no and try to go their own way, they're going to get so much pressure, including from the president himself.
That'd be good.
We're going to be able to get them done, but it's not. Nothing's going to be easy.
All right, we're out. Have a Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Phil.
You too.
You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
The stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till He appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder bays a new and glorious morn. Was born. Oh, no.